This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. Mother Catherine Seals is a mysterious figure. There's not much written about her, and there are only a few photographs of her. So a lot of what we do know about this spiritual mother is hearsay.
And she was a great healer. She took care of a lot of the people.
She was very tall and very strong.
At that time out here, she was powerful.
She had what you call a juju. She was rocking.
Now Mother Catherine herself played a trombone.
She was an awesome musician.
Like when my mother was living and all those people, they always used to talk about Mother Catherine, how she walked barefoot through the neighborhood.
Some of the stories about her say that, you know, once she created her Bethlehem in the Lower Ninth Ward, that she never left.
This Bethlehem in the Lower Ninth Ward was the church and manger where Mother Catherine ministered to thousands of people, black and white, during the height of Jim Crow in the 1920s. She called her compound the Temple of the Innocent Blood. To understand why, we need to go back and understand more about this woman before she was known as Mother Catherine Seals, when she was still Catherine Nanny Cowens, a girl from Kentucky.
Mother Catherine Seals came to New Orleans at age 16.
This is Dr. Ina Fandrich.
I have actually a PhD in voodoo. How about that?
Actually, it's in religious history. But for years, she's been studying African spiritual heritage in Catholic areas in the New World, which is how she discovered Mother Catherine, who, as a 16-year-old in 1913, was still Nanny Cowens. She leaves a rough life in Kentucky and heads for New Orleans on her own. Within a year, she gets married.
That was no good.
Her husband was physically abusive. A few years later, she marries again.
The next husband was no good.
He also became violent. So she leaves him and marries for a third time. But her third and final husband is the most dangerous of all.
He kicks her in one of his violent outbursts, kicks her so badly in her stomach that she's left paralyzed. So now what?
She goes to a healer named Brother Isaiah.
This is Cody Roberts, an assistant professor of history at Louisiana State University.
A white man who claims to be a prophet and a spiritual healer, who's apparently healing folks up on the levee of the Mississippi River. But when she goes to him, he turns her away because she's African American.
The man tells her, "I can't help you. You are black. I only heal white people." So you see, she's rejected, 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 rejected. Now there's no hope anymore.
Her followers say she prays, and then she's visited by a spirit. The spirit tells her to create her own organization of sinners that she can help and she can heal.
Her spiritual experience leads her to Mother Leafy Anderson, the founder of the spiritual church movement in New Orleans. Anderson trains her to be a spiritual mother so she can follow her calling and start her own independent church. Chandra McCormick and Keith Calhoun are both documentary photographers that grew up in the Lower Ninth Ward. Here's Keith.
At one time in the Lower Ninth Ward, you had a lot of churches in the back of people's houses. You would go in the back, and they did their worship.
Here's Chandra.
As a child, I saw many, many women in my community dressed in all white, you know, heads wrapped. And every time you saw them walk in the streets, they had that white on. And you knew that that was a spiritual person.
But most of these rituals were kept behind closed doors. Since spiritual practices trace back to African traditions, many white people associated these religions with voodoo. But they're not the same thing, says Cody.
Anybody doing anything unorthodox that maybe mainstream Christians would have a problem with, they get tagged with that label of voodoo as kind of an accusation about their practice. It says black, it says backward, it says dangerous.
John Taylor also grew up in the Ninth Ward, like Keith and Chandra, and the three of them were all hanging out when I met up with them. He says this is exactly why the spiritual churches weren't throwing up billboards all over town.
All this was done most of the time under secrecy. You know where the churches was sometimes, mm-hmm. but other, it didn't have a big sign right. saying it was a spiritual thing because
exactly.
because I remember when you stuck a nail in your foot, they put dirt and wrap it up, and it would heal it. And if you told a doctor that you was putting dirt on the soul, then you was crazy.
Right.
Because the public scrutinized things that they don't understand.
Same.
That's why when Nanny Cowens decided to form her own church, she looked to the outskirts of town, across the Industrial Canal, where there was still no electricity or paved roads. She changed her name to Mother Catherine Seals, bought what's now an entire block of Charbonnet Street in the Lower Ninth Ward, built a 10-foot wall around her property, and got to work. You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Captain Levinson.
Yes, Lord, you've been. It's so good. That's why I thank you. So right now, are we kind of circling her property, or what was her property?
Mm-hmm. Right now, we're walking around the block.
This is archaeologist Ryan Gray, who you might remember I talked to for a different episode about the St. Peter Street Cemetery under the French Quarter. He's also done controlled digs on what was formerly Mother Catherine's Temple of the Innocent Blood on Charbonnet Street in the Lower Nine. There were two main buildings.
Her temple and then her manger, which was this kind of open-air building where it's described as holding over 300 people.
Ryan is enamored by descriptions of the physical space. Records say there were usually over 500 lamps blazing at any given time. There were also sculptures scattered all over the place, small clay sculptures that Mother Catherine made herself. And it was muddy.
You know, all the accounts, they talk about roads ending before they even get out here. So you'd have to walk over through these muddy, marshy blocks. And then it was this walled compound rising out in the middle of the marshland.
He says choosing to be right at the edge of the city limits was deliberate.
It was just inaccessible enough to offer some sort of protection for a group that was defying racial and gendered norms.
When it came to Mother Catherine, she was most known for her healing powers. She used simple ingredients like castor oil and Epsom salts to ward off or expunge disease.
There are also descriptions of people having wounds healed through chickens that were tied onto their legs.
As word got around about Mother Catherine, more people trudged through knee-deep mud to visit her temple. Which brings us back to the name, the Temple of the Innocent Blood. Here's Ina Fandrich again.
What she found out was a lot of women who have children out of wedlock, both black and white, who are discarded by society. These children, who are often subject of terrible abuse, now become the innocent blood because Jesus was born out of wedlock.
Mother Catherine related to women who were abandoned and abused by men, and so she decided to service these women first and foremost. But she also vowed to not turn anyone away, no matter their age, gender, or race. This is how the Temple of the Innocent Blood flattened racial hierarchies, which a Times-Picayune reporter named Francis White noticed. For a story on Mother Catherine, he tagged along with a few first-time white visitors in 1924.
A small African-American girl that they said was about 9 years old ushered them inside. They wanted to sit up front. And the little girl said, "Oh no, that's only for saints. I am a saint. You have to sit in the back." What a peculiar reversal of the social order when if you are white or anyone, if you're the governor, you sit in the back because you are not a saint.
Which caused backlash, says Ina.
Apparently, there were arson attacks on a regular basis. There were a lot of people upset. You know, how can you all sit in one compound, be happy together? You're not allowed to do that.
So why did white people go to her temple? Well, let's say you didn't have any money to see a doctor. Or you did see a doctor who said there was nothing he or she could do. And then you heard there was a healer down in the Lower Nine who was curing tuberculosis. You went.
She was a very, very intense healer, and she put up these absolutely amazing ceremonies.
Ina knows this through the writings of novelist Zora Neale Hurston, who visited the Temple of the Innocent Blood in the 1920s and became taken with Mother Catherine's aura.
She said Catherine of Russia, which was the great Tsaress of Russia, could not have been more impressive upon her throne than was this black Catherine sitting upon an ordinary chair at the edge of her platform within the entrance to the tent. A white robe and a gorgeous red cape falling away from her broad shoulders. The white cockatoo would scream when the shouting got too loud. Four Mongol dogs strolled about. A donkey, a mother goat with her kid, number of hens, a sheep, all wandered in and out of the service without seeming out of place. And the world moved on.
What seemed like a wild mess of a world was actually designed with intention. Ryan explains.
What is being perceived as disorder by visitors is her way of creating a disorder that dislocates people from the sort of everyday society that they're used to. When people entered, they would immediately know that they were somewhere where the traditional rules no longer mattered and where the racial hierarchy was dissolved in that space, at least for a few minutes.
Mother Catherine Seals led the Temple of the Innocent Blood from 1922 until her death in 1930. Her jazz funeral was one of the largest in the city's history, with thousands of people in the streets and a write-up in Time magazine. Mother Rita was second in command to Mother Catherine and kept the temple alive for another few years. Ultimately, though, it couldn't survive without her. But her success inspired a larger spiritual church movement. John Taylor, Keith Calhoun, and Chandra McCormick have all seen this in practice.
People had her picture on the altar like she was a saint to them. You would go to some church and the altar would have a picture of Mother Catherine. You know, as the patron saint, like she was the, yeah.
Yeah, you would pray to Mother Catherine like you pray to a Catholic saint.
There were still a few spiritual churches operating in the Lower Ninth Ward in the early 2000s, but Hurricane Katrina wiped them out, and they haven't come back. If you were running a church out of your house, and you lost your house, you also lost your church. But John Taylor says Catherine Seale's legacy lives on, even without any churches that trace back to her.
The legacy is that nobody forgets her. You know, it comes up. Even people like me that don't know nothing, haven't physically saw her or physically went to this church, you know, this travels on, you know, like this is like Daniel Boone or David Crockett. They'll never die.
And I can walk, just let me walk, Lord, he goes with me.
Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midloaf Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered, or hear Tripod whenever you want, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go to iTunes to give us a review and rate us. Thank you. We are also on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TripodNola. I'm Lane Kaplan Levinson. And
I'm Ina Fandwich, and I tripod you later.
Let it be on. Oh, dear Lord. Oh, let it be. Oh, when help, 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 help. When my fever.